All right, if you would turn to Jeremiah chapter 50. And we'll pick back up with our study here on the destruction of Babylon. We're going to start with verse 21, and Lord willing, we'll get through the end of the chapter tonight. This is all the same topic, and actually carries over into chapter 21, but we won't go that far, of course, tonight. If you remember last time, the Lord talked about giving his prophecy to Jeremiah and having him preach it. And he's talking about the prophecy against Babylon, about the destruction of Babylon and what was coming when the king of the Medes and the Persians would come and overtake the Chaldeans and totally destroy Babylon. And then we talked about how even today the place where that city was is uninhabitable for the most part. It's from what I remember seeing in pictures when our troops were over there, what things they found. Saddam Hussein, former president of Iraq, had plans to rebuild the city of Babylon, but never got around to doing it. I think he had gathered some materials and actually maybe started some of the foundational work and that kind of stuff, but for the most part, there was not much there. And in the pictures, you see the background, you can see that it's desert. Even though, if you remember, the city of Babylon was built on the river Euphrates. And before I mess up, let me look at a map. Make sure I get this right. Babylon is on the river Euphrates, and it's in what's known as the Fertile Crescent, in what's now Iraq. And the Medes and the Persians, of course, come from the area of Iran, what is Iran today, in that side of the Persian Gulf. There was also a nation known as Assyria that was north of Israel and kind of northwest of Babylon, or the land of the Chaldees. They were overthrown also. And from what I'm understanding in the scripture, it sounds as though the king of Persia overtook Assyria first and then went on into Babylon, into the Chaldees and then into Babylon. There's also, if you've got a map in the back of your Bible, especially the one I have is of Roman times, but it's close. There was a kingdom of Armenia, or what was eventually would be Armenia. It's part of Turkey, part of Iraq, part of some other countries today. It's kind of north of, it's due east of Turkey and north of Iraq. It's part of what we'll be looking at tonight will be there. If you go back to Jeremiah chapter 21, he mentions two places here, Marathim and Pekod. It's believed that those two places, one, Pekod was a city, and Marathim was a nation that would have been in that part of the world at that time. There were, I don't know, maybe not a nation, but more of an area of a state in that part of the world, in a part of Assyria. It was part of Assyria at that time. So that's really the only thing. I don't think there's anything else to go to the map for tonight, you know, in our study, but that's kind of to start off with the first verse we're going to start with. So let's start verse 21. go up against the land of Marathim, even against it and against the inhabitants of Pekod, because waste and utterly destroy after them, saith the Lord, and do according to all that I have commanded thee. Remember, throughout our study in Jeremiah, the Lord has commanded the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, he was under God's control. God commanded that he go into Israel and into Judah and eventually into Jerusalem and overtake God's own people. It was chastisement against them. He was to kill a bunch of them. He was going to take a bunch back into captivity, take them back to Babylon and make slaves of them. And that all happened. He also destroyed all the nations around Israel who had caused Israel such grief, had taken them astray into false gods and all that. He used the king of Babylon to destroy all them too. And God says that he was the one that sent him. He was the one that caused it to happen. Now, God is controlling the king of Persia, the king of the Medes and the Persians. And he's going to make that king go in and destroy Babylon. And so that's what our study is going to be in tonight. He says, a sound of battle is in the land, and of a great destruction. How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How is Babylon become a desolation among the nations? This once great nation of Babylon, and Babylon's been a power for quite a while. I forget the number of years. I didn't think to look it up for this study, but maybe next time. But Babylon was a power for a long time. Not as long as the Romans were, the Roman Empire was, but for a long time. And as we looked last week, we went back and we looked how Babylon, you could trace it back to the Tower of Babel and to the descendants of Ham, Noah's son. Phone call. So the Babylon's been there a long time. Or there's been people in that region for a long time. And now, with this desolation, it's going to become bare, he says. In verse 24, I have laid a snare for thee. And now, hold on a minute. Let's back up to, that's right. Verse 24, I have laid a snare for thee, and thou art also taken, O Babylon, and thou wast not aware. Thou art found and also caught, because thou hast striven against the Lord. So why is the Lord going to destroy Babylon? Because they've gone against him. And how did they go against him? Remember, God used Babylon to chastise his own people. But remember what Babylon did after that. Remember the story of Nebuchadnezzar remember when the Lord had him living as a beast and eating grass? And remember his words? Maybe we'll look at that for next time too, because it's an interesting story that kind of goes along with some of this. It looks at it like it towards the end of that story that Nebuchadnezzar turns out to be a good person. And he recognizes the Lord in what's written there. But we know that Babylon as a whole is an evil place. And in our study in Revelation, even the name Babylon, even down through the ages, is recognized as an evil place. The mystery religion that come out of there. There's a, it's study, that's a study for another time, of course. We don't want to get into it here, but there's a whole, what's referred to as the Babylonian mystery religion. A lot of false worship and false gods that come out of that society there. And some of it followed Israel back to Israel when the nation of Israel back to the land of Israel when they left out of the captivity. Some of it has spread throughout, or most of it has spread out through all the world now. The Roman Catholicism can trace their roots, some of it back to the mystery religion of Babylon. And we've talked about that some in other studies, but so I won't go there tonight. But verse 25, the Lord hath opened his armory and hath brought forth the weapons of his indignation. For this is the work of the Lord of hosts in the land of the Chaldeans. We see here again, it's the Lord's work. He's the one causing this to happen. Come against her from the uttermost border. Open her storehouses. Cast her up as heaps and destroy her utterly. Let nothing of her be left. They're going to totally destroy this city, and that's what's happened. Like I said, it's well documented that there's Babylon is a pile of rubble today. Slay all her bullocks, let them go down to the slaughter. Woe unto them, for their day is come, the time of their visitation. Their time's come. The Lord's wrath is going to come upon this city very soon in Jeremiah's time. The voice of them that flee and the escape out of the land of Babylon to declare in Zion the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. And if you remember, in the story, and we've touched on some of this in Jeremiah, there's more of it in some other prophets in the books of the prophets in the Old Testament. Babylon, remember when they took Jerusalem and they took the vessels out of the temple? Remember, they destroyed Jerusalem, the temple, the palaces, everything. They took the vessels out of the temple back to Babylon. And their own priest even used some of those very vessels to worship to their false gods with. And God was angered by it because those were his. Those belonged to him. Those come out of his house. And so that's what he's talking about here. He says the vengeance of his temple. God's going to get vengeance for what they've done to his house. In verse 29, call together the archers against Babylon. All they that bend the bow camp against it round about. Let none therefore escape. Recompense her according to her work, according to all that she hath done. Do unto her, for she hath been proud against the Lord, against the Holy One of Israel. Remember the stories, and we've talked about this, mentioned this several times, the stories of, and we think of the book of Daniel and the three young men that were in the fiery furnace, and why they were there. They were there because they wouldn't bow down to the false god. And if you remember the story, a lot of the people in Israel, or a lot of the Hebrew people that were there, did bow down to the false god. There was a statue of the king, and they bowed down to it. But those three men refused. And so the king thought he would kill them by putting them in the fiery furnace, and wound up killing his own guards instead. And those three men lived through it. And the son of God was there with them and protected them. There were other instances where they were forced to worship the false gods of Babylon. They were forced to build those very gods. And just like they were in Egypt. If you remember, it's very similar to what their ancestors went through in Egypt. And they were forced to build the bricks and the mortar and all the palaces and all the temples and everything to the false gods in Egypt. They were done the same way in Babylon. And so it angered God very much. In verse 30, therefore shall her young men fall in the streets, and all her men of war shall be cut off in that day, saith the Lord. And remember how mighty an army the king of Babylon had, and the Chaldean army. You know, the land of the Chaldees was the nation, and Babylon was the capital city. Both armies were full of mighty men, mighty fighters. They were well trained. And when they came against Israel and against Judah and against Jerusalem and against the other nations around them, when the time came, no one could stand against the armies of Babylon and the Chaldeans. Yet, the Medes and the Persians are not going to have any problem at all overtaking them. If you noticed back there in verse 29, it talks about the archers. He says, all you that bend the bow camp against it round about. They besieged Babylon just like Babylon besieged Jerusalem. And if you remember when we studied that, when they besieged a city, that meant they surrounded the city completely and didn't let anybody in or out. And so all outside communication was cut off, all outside help, any supplies they needed, whatever they had in the city was all that they had. And Babylon was a very large city. And so this wasn't a small force that overtook them. This was a very large army that encamped about Babylon. And with the walls of Babylon, the archers, he says, they didn't have cannons in their day or missiles. They had archers, bows and arrows, and they might have had a catapult if it was, I think they had those by then. But the archers were their greatest weapon in a siege like that. They could shoot arrows over the wall and into the city, and it would keep an army pinned down as long as they could do it. In verse 32, and the most proud shall stumble and fall, and none shall raise him up. And I will kindle a fire in his cities, and it shall devour all round about him. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the children of Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together. And all that took them captives held them fast. They refused to let them go. Their Redeemer is strong. The Lord of hosts is his name. He shall thoroughly plead their cause, that he may give rest to the land and disquiet the inhabitants of Babylon. The Lord has come to free his people, is what's going on here. He has sent an army, even though this army is just as wicked as Babylon was. Babylon's getting back what they put out. They're getting their paybacks, in other words. And it's their Redeemer. Who's their Redeemer? It's Christ, the Son of God. He's the only one that's referred to as a Redeemer in the Scripture. Now, we know that in their day, much of Israel, and I'm talking about the combined Israel and Judah, they only knew what they saw of in the law as far as the Messiah and who their Redeemer was. Some understood it, some didn't. I think maybe they probably, in reading in the Old Testament, and particularly towards the end of their captivity when the Lord began to reveal himself to them again, I think they probably had a better understanding of the Messiah than we give them credit for a lot of times. Certainly David did, and they would have had his writings, Solomon, and Jeremiah, the prophets that were alive in their day, would have known these things and understood them. And you know, Jeremiah was preaching them. Matter of fact, in the early part of the book, he was preaching the Messiah to them. And so there, he says their Redeemer is strong. They knew who the Redeemer was. They hadn't seen him yet. He hadn't come yet. But that was their hope. Just like our hope today is we look for his coming back. They were looking for his first coming. We're looking for him coming back for his bride. And so the Redeemer, their Redeemer is strong. The Lord of hosts is his name. Verse 35, a sword is upon the Chaldeans, saith the Lord, and upon the inhabitants of Babylon, and upon her princes, and upon her wise men. A sword is upon the liars, and they shall dote. A sword is upon her mighty men, and they shall be dismayed. A sword is upon their horses, and upon their chariots, and upon all the mingled people that are in the midst of her. And they shall become as women. A sword is upon her treasures, and they shall be robbed. They're about to lose everything. Everything that they've gathered. In Babylon was a very wealthy city, probably one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest, in that part of the world, that part of the world has ever seen. They robbed Jerusalem of their wealth. They robbed all the other nations around Israel of their wealth. They went all the way to Egypt, robbed them. They brought all this wealth back to Babylon itself. And now the Medes and the Persians are going to do the same thing to them. A drought is upon her waters, and they shall be dried up, for it is the land of graven images, and they are mad upon their idols. Spiritually speaking here, they're dead. They're dried up. They're in a spiritual drought. And he says, for it is the land of graven images. Because it's a pagan world, a pagan nation, a pagan city. They're mad upon their idols. In other words, they're crazy about their idols. They worship their idols. They're incest with them. Verse 39, therefore the wild beast of the desert, with the wild beast of the islands, shall dwell there, and the owls, they shall dwell therein, and it shall be no more inhabited forever. Neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation, and it's still that way today. Nobody lives there. Now, we have to remember, and some people try to get the Babylon of Jeremiah mixed up with the Babylon mentioned in Revelation. He's speaking of the Babylon, the ancient Babylon of the land of Chaldees. He's not speaking of the Babylon that we see in the book of Revelation in chapter 17, where we've been studying, in chapter 18. That's the Babylon to come. That's the new Babylon to come. He's speaking here of the ancient Babylon. They were a very adulterous nation. Now, the comparison here is that the Babylon that's to come is going to be very, very similar. It's going to be a very adult. And if you look at, if we believe, like we've been teaching, we believe that the Catholic Church is the Babylon is referred to in Revelation, you can see very clearly that they're a land of graven images, as he says here. They're full of idols. You go to any Catholic holy site or any one of their church buildings or any of their cathedrals, it's full of idols. Even the simplest of chapels that they have idols. That's what they bow down to. And so it's very similar in that way, in that respect. As God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighbor cities thereof, saith the Lord, So shall no man abide there, neither shall any son of man dwell therein. And if you remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, you remember that God destroyed not just the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, but the cities of the plains, how it's worded there in Genesis. They were all in cahoots, if you will, with the sin that was being committed there. It was a very wicked place, and so their neighboring cities were destroyed also. As with Babylon, Babylon's not the only city in the land of the Chaldees that's destroyed. It's all the cities. Everything will be destroyed by this army that's coming. And if you remember, didn't go there tonight, maybe another time before we finish this book, but when Israel was taken captive, Israel and Judah were taken captive, they didn't all go to the same part of the country. And I can't remember now right offhand how many different places they went to, but here he says they came together. But in the beginning of their captivity, they were in different places. Maybe we'll try to look at that before we end the book too. We'll get more into that. I believe it's in chapter 52. Yeah, in 52, we'll look at some of that. In verse 41, behold, a people shall come from the north, and a great nation, and many kings shall be raised up from the coast of the earth. They shall hold the bow and the lance. They are cruel and will not show mercy. Their voice shall roar like the sea, and they shall ride upon horses. Everyone put in array like a man to the battle against thee, O daughter of Babylon. The only difference you see here between the army of Babylon and the army of this army of the north that he speaks of here, he says many kings shall be raised up. There were several kingdoms that came together that formed the Medes and the Persians. And there were several kingdoms that came together, and so these kings formed an alliance and came against Babylon. They were under the leadership of one king, but many of these nations came together. Unlike with Babylon, you only see the talk of the king of Babylon. He was also the king of the Chaldeans also, but they were two separate armies. He had his elite force with the army of Babylon, and then the Chaldeans had their national, what we would call a national army. So it was much different in that respect. But here, we're going to see many kings rise up together. And he says, from the coast of the earth, we're going to come from all over to take Babylon. Verse 43, the king of Babylon hath heard the report of them, and his hands waxed feeble. Anguish took hold of him, and pains as of a woman in travail. The king of Babylon is scared because he's heard this army is coming. And it's greater than anything he's ever seen, anything he's ever witnessed. And he knows his army is not going to be able to withstand the fight. And behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan unto the habitation of the strong, but I will make them suddenly run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me? And who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Therefore hear ye the counsel of the Lord, that ye have taken against Babylon, and his purposes, that he hath purposed against the land of the Chaldeans. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitation desolate with them. At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. With Babylon being the wealthiest city in that region at that time, it's going to affect the whole world in that area. Remember, we talked about the trade routes. Babylon being the city that it was, the trade routes come through there. And it was a major commerce for the trade routes. It was on the River Euphrates. There was shipping there. That would come down the river and all the way to the Persian Gulf. It was a well-known city for commerce and for it was a vacation place, if we put it in today's terms. It was a place people went to for vacation. It was supposedly a very beautiful place to them back then. There was the Hanging Gardens that the king of Babylon had built. There was his library that he had built there. They had the temples to their gods were there. All that. And so when the city is destroyed, it's going to move the earth. It's going to disrupt commerce in that part of the world. And he says, and the cry is heard among the nations. This is going to be even more upsetting to the rest of the world than the destruction of Jerusalem. Because, for one, Jerusalem was the city of God. No one cared much about it. They cried and moaned about it because they didn't have that stop on their trade route anymore. And they probably lost money because of it. But Babylon was a much greater place as far as the world was concerned. You had all their false gods there. They had places to go where they could go and worship. And according to history, this Babylonian mystery religion, many of the idols that they had there were very similar to what they saw in other parts of the world. And so it was a melting pot, if you will, of different peoples that come together. If you look back in verse 37, he says, and upon all the mingled people that are in the midst of her. The mingled people. He's about multinational peoples that were there. People from different religions were there. They could go there and worship how they wanted to and when they wanted to and what they wanted to. Because that's what went on in Babylon. And when it's destroyed, the cry is heard among the nations, it says. So we'll stop there for tonight. We'll pick up with chapter 51 next time. And chapter 51 is even longer than chapter 52, or than chapter 50. So I don't think we'll get through it in one message either, but we'll see. So that's all we have for tonight.